Podcast today's show at rte.ie/todaywithseanorourke.
The world is facing a tsunami of lard, writes Professor Mike Gibney. He is referring to the increasing incidence of obesity, a condition he considers in a new book called Ever Seen a Fat Fox? Human Obesity Explored. Mike Gibney is with me in studio. Thank you for coming in, Professor Gibney.
Thank you.
A tsunami of lard, where is it all coming from?
Well, it's difficult to know why we're having this huge explosion in obesity, but basically it's because we're doing less and we're eating more. That's looks as though it's a very simple explanation, but in fact that hides a plethora of very, very complicated explanations. And one of the reasons why I wrote this book was to try and challenge some of the simplistic analysis of why we have this problem of obesity.
And presumably, though, there is a strong connection between obesity on the one hand and material prosperity and abundance of food, particularly, on the other.
Yes, there is, without any question or doubt. And if you go back in time, everywhere you've seen prosperity, whether it's been medieval Italy, ancient Greece, ancient Rome, wherever you've seen prosperity and wealth, you've seen obesity, and that's been recorded and documented.
And does that lead you to use this phrase, and I think you use it repeatedly, obesogenic environment?
Yes, it's a phrase that is widely used nowadays to suggest that the world we live in is obesogenic. It's predisposing to obesity if you're genetically determined to do so. So, for example, if we all lived out on the Maasai plains of Kenya, that's not obesogenic. We have to walk everywhere. There's no cars. There's no stopping for a pint. There's no fish and chip shops on the way home. I was calculating the other day, the average American walks 5,000 steps a day. The average Amish American walks 37,000 steps a day. Part of the problem is the reduction in energy expended at work. Energy-saving devices have made huge differences, and that is one of the contributing factors.
On the other hand, though, we have probably more green space than we've ever had, certainly more modern sports facilities, and we have a lot of leisure time by and large, even people who are lucky enough to have jobs, and yet society more sedentary than ever.
Yeah, leisure time activity has actually either stayed the same or gone up. So if you look at leisure time activity, it's quite big. And the leisure industry is big, as gyms growing up and sprouting everywhere. The big problem for us is the long commutes at work, sitting in cars, and then sitting down at work all day. Virtually every profession now, whether it's building cars, you're sitting at a computer, constructing the car, and a robot does it all for you. So leisure time, we're certainly spending more time in gyms and physical activity.
Some of us are. And again, before we talk about some of the answers, though, I mean, is it a combination of lack of exercise, excessive consumption of the wrong types of foods, or what is it? I mean, you said there's no one single cause.
It's two things. It's the lack of exercise and it's overconsumption of calories. There's no single calorie that counts more than others. And that's one of the biggest problems we have nowadays. We fellas writing books and appearing on social media telling you that if you eat this food or that food, you'll gain weight or lose weight. Or if you balance calories this way or that
or
way,
you'll
gain.
Or cut out the carbs, carb-free.
Yeah, it's total and utter rubbish. It's calories, stupid, to paraphrase Clinton. So it doesn't matter whether you overeat on cakes or pints or fine dining, you'll get fat. Endless amounts of money have been spent by the federal US government to investigate whether a one calorie is better than another. And the answer is simply a resounding no, it isn't. Calories are calories.
Yeah, I suppose, and they come from different sources. But for instance, now, how dangerous is sugar in your view?
It's absolutely safe as houses. I mean, our brain requires sugar. It's the only fuel our brain uses.
And yet, I think the programme for government has a provision in it for a sugar tax.
Exactly, it has. And it's become the popular movement across the world to curb and ban sugar and to tax sugar. And there's little I can do other than to point out that there's no sense in this. The fact is, in Ireland and in Australia, Canada, the US and all countries where we can compare our cuisines, our sugar consumption has remained constant for over 25 years. Now, how come if it's constant and we've got fatter, there's a relationship? You don't have to be a genius to figure there's something silly about that. So you have to look at what people buy, what people eat, and the overall balance of nutrients in the diet. Yeah, we have data.
People will buy what tastes nice and doesn't cost a whole lot. And we have, I suppose, increasing examples of maybe easily available alcohol that's falling in price, relatively speaking.
Yeah, alcohol is a big problem for people like myself who are trying to collect information on what people eat, because people lie about alcohol fantastically. They lie about food in general. So most people underreport like the food they consume, but alcohol is out by a country mile in terms of what they report.
Of what people will own up to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How do you know that? If you say by definition they won't tell you.
It's the difference between what we know is sold, bought and sold on the open market, and what people say they bought and sold.
So there must be huge, if people are telling the truth, there are huge stocks of alcoholic drinks all over the country.
Someone stockpiled it.
You're critical of what you call mindless eating. What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a book called Mindless Eating by Professor Wansink from Cornell. And what mindless eating is just sitting there, just mindlessly eating. And what Wansink has tried to point out is that if you introduce just one little jolt to your memory or to your mind in mindless eating, it changes everything. A fantastic example was a study he did with Pringles, in association with Pringles. So every seventh Pringle was red. So you go along your tube and you hit red. One group had number 14 was red. Another group, number 21 was red. Another group had two. Another group, three. Another group, none. The group that had none at the most, as soon as they hit the red, they stop. Oh, maybe I shouldn't have another one. And it only takes a nanosecond for you to stop mindless eating. And so, for example, he would suggest that when you buy biscuits, keep them in the packet, put them in a container and put them in a screw top jar and put them on the top shelf. Now you've got four things to do before you have a biscuit.
And you have a question you think that people should ask themselves every time they're about to eat.
Yeah, well, people eat with their eyes. So, for example, if you look at all of the food consumed at home, 95% of the food consumed at home is eaten, the plate is clean. And in breakfast, it's 100%. If people put it on the plate themselves, they'll eat almost everything, because from a survival point of view, it made no sense to throw a load of food on the plate and waste it. And it made no sense not to put enough on the plate. So you put enough on to do the job you wanted to do. If you go to restaurants and someone else serves you, you will be given more food than you need, and you leave it behind you. But how much to put on the plate, that's the big thing. And mindful eating, in other words, the abandonment of mindless eating, helps you to judge the plate better.
That's a very practical thing. It doesn't cost anything. And it's just, as you say, a mindful approach. What else could be done? I mean, are there initiatives that the state could undertake, in your view?
Well, in my view, there are many initiatives ongoing in the state. And if I look at other countries in Europe, the same thing. But let me put it to you this way. Over 100 people die on our roads every year. The Department of Health here tell me that there are 2,000 excess deaths due to obesity every year. In other words, 2,000 people die earlier than they should have died. Now, you say to yourself, we set up the Road Safety Authority, chaired by high-profile individuals who are enormously successful in advertising on the television and raising awareness and helping us to behave and drive better on the roads. And they have been brilliantly successful in reducing fatalities and injuries on the road. We need the same in food. In my view, we need an independent agency away from government, away from the pushes and pulls of industry and interested groups, an independent agency with a long-term view, because fashion comes, fashion goes. We need a long-term view.
Yeah, but are you giving a free pass in all of this to, say, the big food-producing companies? Or no, where do you see responsibility, or do you see responsibility lying with them?
Well, the big food companies play their role, but unfortunately, 90% of our food comes from small food companies. The big food companies supply the things that are heavily advertised on television. But according to the European Union statistics, and if you ask Enterprise Ireland, the vast majority of food that you eat comes from names you never heard of before. I mean, if you go down your local supermarket and you take their bread and you take their salad and you buy their potatoes and their fruit and the vegetables, tell me, what corporation have you bought from so far?
Yeah, but I suppose they're the basics, and they're, if you like, they're generic kind of products to which you refer. You could throw in eggs maybe as well.
Oh, and meat and cheese and milk.
But at the same time, I'm thinking maybe more of the processed foods that you get in the frozen food compartments, that kind of thing.
Well, now, is milk not a processed food? Is bread not a processed food? When you talk about processed food, what do you mean? I mean, bread is the most processed food there is going. It started off as grain, and a biscuit is the same with a little bit extra sugar added to it. So when I hear this word processed, it's a prejudiced word against the modern food chain. And it's as though if it's unprocessed, it's brilliant. This is complete nonsense. The idea of processed food is one of the biggest distractions we have. Most of the food that we eat in Ireland is not produced by major corporations. If you like it, typically your Sunday dinner is not. It's produced by Irish farmers. And most of that isn't processed.
You, I gather, are a big believer in the idea of regular brisk walking or walks.
I do.
What do you mean by that? What's a brisk walk? How long does it last? How far does it take you?
30 minutes a day is what the Center for Disease Control in the States recommend. If you can do 40, that's terrific. And it doesn't have to be every day of the week. They say 5 days of the week. And it doesn't have to be all at the one time. So you could walk 15 minutes into work and 15 minutes back and get the bus halfway. Or you could walk a bit in the morning, a bit at lunchtime and a bit in the evening. But there was a very big study recently carried out across the whole of Europe by a very distinguished group of people. And they found out that the risk of dying from physical inactivity was twice the risk of obesity. So it's the poor brother of obesity. And it's actually ranked fourth. The fourth cause of leading deaths in the world by the WHO is physical inactivity. Just outside the medals, obesity is number five.
So in other words, you're saying that you might be slim, you might be trim, but if you're not active, you're not moving.
Oh, if you're fit and sedentary, you're worse off than being fat and fit. And the data is definitely there to show it. The single most important thing we need to do as a nation is get active and manage, help individuals. That's the big problem we have nowadays. Everyone is introducing regulations and curbing and advertising and what have you. I would love to see ordinary people helped in their quest to lose weight through slimming clubs, through referrals to dietitians by GPs. It will require the government to spend money. But you're talking now about the cost of obesity. The figure for Ireland is very hard to get. But let me give you what the McKinsey people said in the UK. The cost of obesity in the UK to the health service alone is equal to the entire cost of the police, prison, fire and court services combined.
On that thoughtful note, we shall leave it. Mike Gibney, Professor Mike Gibney, author of Ever Seen a Fat Fox? Human Obesity Explored. It's published by University College Dublin Press, price €20. Thank you very much indeed for coming to studio.
Thank you very much indeed.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.